obviously, we're going to open back up to 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and look back at some things that we talked about there last time. We just gotten started into our discussion on giving and on and on the support of the ministry as Paul is addressing the people at Corinth here. And as we talked about, you know, Paul, while he was at Corinth, made a point, a purposeful effort, and a successful one, that he was not going to collect any kind of offerings, really, for himself, for the support of the ministry from the church at Corinth. And sometimes people will use that as a justification for not paying a preacher or not supporting a preacher, or thinking that a preacher needs to have a secular job and that a ministry is not full-time. And obviously we went through that last time and pointed out those errors, and that that is not the case. And that as Paul overly went over and over again in this chapter was that it's actually the opposite, that the man of God is called to live by the gospel. That he's to live of the gospel, from the gospel, and in the gospel. That is to be his life, and that it is very hard to do that when you're working 40, 50, or 60 hours a week at a secular job. That you are actually to live of the gospel, just like the Levites lived of the temple of God. And that they were constantly in the service of God, they were constantly in the employment of God, so to speak, and God made a provision of them. He created something called a tithe, okay? And I wanted to emphasize that. I kind of glanced over it last time. But, you know, tithe and tithing is not some 21st century Baptist convention creation, okay? Tithing was actually created by God. The word was created by God. The message and the teaching was created by God. That was something, it's 32 times it is in the Bible, okay? You know what, just for a reference, okay? Because people will say, well, you know, tithing, you know, what? It's just a word, number one. Number two, you know, Trinity, the word Trinity is not in the Bible. Yeah, none of us are going to argue the doctrine of the Trinity, are we? Okay, well, something that's in the Bible 32 times, we're definitely not going to argue with, okay? So tithing is in the Bible. It's there. You know, people will use it in the New Testament, say, well, that was Old Testament. That was 10% was a regulation by the Old Testament. And then in the New Testament, it's a new way and we don't do it that way anymore. And I would agree with you in one sense, okay? And that God did not come in the New Testament and say, I expect you to only give 10% of what you take in every month, and then that is to be your monthly tribute to me. Okay? He did not reiterate that portion of the law. However, the principle behind tithing in the Old Testament carries forward 110%. Okay? God, if you look over in Leviticus, number one, well, first place we see it in Genesis chapter 14, Abraham gave 10% of his goods to Melchizedek, recognizing Melchizedek as being a man of God. He gave 10% of his goods. That's the first time tithing is used in the Bible. God then establishes it as part of the law. You can go over to Leviticus chapter 27, and you get this very interesting verse in Leviticus chapter 27, in verse 30. He says, and all the tithe of the land, all the things of the trees, all the things of the grass, all the things of the lambs and the sheep and the oxen, the 10% of all of that, it is holy unto the Lord. So he says it's not just a matter, you know, we think strictly on money. And there was another teaching in that called the first fruits teaching, which was basically that of the first fruits of your goods, you were to give 10% of that to God. Okay? It was a tribute unto him. It was a gift unto him. It was a offering unto him as a way of acknowledging where it came from and almost in a sense, quote unquote, paying it back. Okay. So you're making kind of an offering in the sense that you're acknowledging this grain that I have. It's not because I went out and I did all this hard work and I made it come up out of the ground. As Brother Charles was saying earlier, you know, all a farmer can do is walk out there, till the ground, put some fertilizer in there, throw a seed in there, cover it up, and then cross his fingers and hope that thing grows, okay? And on top of that, he's got to hope that it grows, but then it also produces fruit. So you can have a corn stalk without any corn on it, and you're still cornless, okay? No matter how many corn plants you have, if you don't have any corn on them, you're cornless. So the way that God kind of established this in the Old Testament was as this principle. I have blessed you to have corn. Take a portion of that and give it to me. Now, he set up 10% because as you go through and you can see it over in Numbers chapter 18 as well, he sets it up there in Numbers chapter 18. He says, you're to give, the Levites do not have an inheritance in the land. He says you're to give 10% of everything you have. All the tribes were to give 10% of their goods, of everything, to the temple. All right, you give 10% of that as a tithe offering. It was heaved up before the Lord. It was offered back up to him as a thanks to him for what he had blessed them to have. But that 10% also went into the temple. And of that 10%, the Levites, who lived basically in the temple, partook of that. Okay, so how they were able to go out and buy clothes and do those kind of things, well, there was 10% of that offering that was theirs. There was 10% of the food that came in that was theirs. There was 10%, and so that was the setting that God set, was that the men in, that are going to be organizing and working the things of God for me, I want them undistracted, and I want them focused on my service. And to do that, that means they don't need to be worrying about, well, I got to go out and pay the light bill. Well, I got to go out and make sure I get a new set of clothes. Well, I got to make sure I get another lamb and get it cooked before, you know, he didn't want them worried about that. He said, you just focus on serving me and I will provide you with everything else. Now, is that a principle that carries over to the New Testament?
Amen.
So the word tithe in the, and I get it. Okay. I get it. And it happens in a lot of ways, and we do it in a lot of ways. And I wish we'd stop. And maybe we're kind of getting out of that, and that's a good thing. But, you know, sometimes we get a little too overly zealous in persecuting words, okay? Well, that makes us sound like somebody else. Well, if we call it a Bible study and not just a Wednesday night prayer meeting, you know, that Bible studies have a bad name. And then, you know, they always lead to Sunday schools, which I've never seen that happen. But anyway, the words we get kind of fixed on, I think, become a stumbling block. And there's no stumbling block with it. It's a biblical word, okay? So the principle is there. God had established a set amount of giving. Now, what will happen is that sometimes we'll come over in the New Testament and we'll say, well, but God loves a cheerful giver. So it shouldn't just be about 10%. It should be about whatever makes you cheerful to give. Well, that's not what that verse means. It's not, well, I give as much as makes me cheerful to do so, and then I stop. No, it's actually, the New Testament, if you really wanted to be real as far as the New Testament, because people will bash about 10% and those kind of things. If you want to be real about the New Testament, the first example we have of the church giving, they gave 100%. As in Acts chapter 2 and 3, when people sold all of their goods and gave it unto the church. Now, I don't see anybody jumping up to volunteer. I haven't even jumped up myself to volunteer 100%. But the point that's being made there is the cheerfulness is to come in the actual act, whether that's 10, 20, 30, or 100%, okay? But when he looked at this, and again, you can look over in Malachi chapter 3, a verse that, you know, it's one of those things, and really, we're gonna move on, I promise. But in Malachi chapter 3, what you have there is, this is the kind of the condemnation, one of the many condemnations that God kind of lays on the children of Israel here. And in Malachi chapter 3 and verse 7, he says, verse 7, even from the days of your fathers, ye are gone away from mine ordinances and have not kept them. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, saith the Lord of hosts. But ye said, wherein shall we return? Will a man rob God? Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. You're cursed with a curse, for ye have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house. And prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. Now, does that give you a little idea about how God felt about giving? Does that give you a little idea about how God really considered the act of tithing? When we take all that into consideration, the act of the church giving, individual families and individuals giving to the church, it's not something that we just hit with a passing glance and say, yeah, you should be doing it, and then we just kind of move on. I think it, again, like Paul is having to do here, there has to be at some point in time a point where you say, okay, I know it's uncomfortable, I know nobody likes to talk about it, and it never fails, and Paul even brings it up here. Every time you bring it up, somebody will either nonchalantly or maybe not even mean any harm, but they throw out that whole little adage of the only reason you preach on this is because you want more money. Well, you know, yeah, number one, that's not the real reason behind it all. But number two, it is a biblical principle. So that kind of is the reason behind it all, because you can't look at the Bible where God has commanded us that we are supposed to do this. And if it was anything else, He's just gone through fornication and everything else. And what have we just said on that? It's like, oh, well, the only reason you're preaching on that is because you want us to live more moral lives. Well, yeah. Duh. Does that not make sense? Well, the only reason you're preaching on money is because I want you to give like God told us to give. And because, as I talked about last time, we talked about how we expect a minister or a pastor to give full-time dedication, but we expect him also to give full-time dedication to a job because we won't support him. How many of us, and again, when we talk about individual lives, when we talk about individuals working, you know, we offer, you know, we give, let's just, we'll throw out a number, okay? So let's say you only pay the minister $10,000 a year. How many of us in here live off of just $10,000 a year? How many of us with wives, husbands, daughters, sons, college, those kind of things, live off of $10,000 a year? We don't. We expect more. We have to work harder so that we can supply those things. Well, we shouldn't expect anything less with the minister. If we want the minister to give full-time support of the flock, then we have to give full-time support of the minister, okay? And that's what Paul's going through here. He went through that for the first 14 verses. He says, I'm not taking anything of you, but he says, this is not acceptable. He said, this is not what the church is supposed to do. The man of God is supposed to be free to live independently and serve God and the gospel. He doesn't need to be tangled up with a job, okay? You know, we talked about in Acts chapter 6, you know, the whole reason they established deacons is because the apostles were saying, you know, here's the deal. We can't be tied up worrying about serving the tables of the church when we're supposed to be dedicated to serving the gospel, okay? So if that thing of making sure that the needs of the widows got met within a church was something that that the apostles looked and said, we can't be bothered with all this. We've got to serve God and worship and study the word. If he used that, well, all the more. The man of God shouldn't be tied up with some 40-hour a week job when he needs to be serving the word of God. So that was the first 14 verses. We talked about, and just as something that I glanced at, I want to make sure I go back to, because we were talking about also in giving, you know, I made reference about giving out to other churches, giving to other churches overseas, and people will, you know, I brought that up and kind of talked about how people will bash that and say that, you know, you shouldn't be supporting monetarily a church overseas because it's, as they try to use 2 Corinthians that we talked about, that you're robbing some other churches of their blessings, you know, and all this nonsense. And what I wanted to make sure I went back on was giving the actual verses that it talks about, okay? So in Acts chapter 11, to start out, Acts chapter 11 and verse 27, it says, and in these days came prophets from Jerusalem unto Antioch, and there stood up one of them named Agabus, and signified by the Spirit that there should be a dearth throughout all the world, which came to pass in the days of Claudius Caesar. Then the disciples, every man according to his ability, determined to send relief unto the brethren which dwelt in Judea, which also they did, and sent it to the elders by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. So that's the first example of the New Testament church giving unto people who were outside. All right, so you had all these people, all these disciples who collected up the money in these churches, and they sent it unto the land of Judea, knowing there was going to come a dearth there. And then I also glanced over in Romans chapter 15. And in Romans chapter 15 and verse 25, he says, but now I go unto Jerusalem to minister unto the saints, for it hath pleased them of Macedonia, who we mentioned in 2 Corinthians, it had pleased them of Macedonia and Achaia, or Asia, to make a certain contribution for the poor saints which are at Jerusalem. It hath pleased them verily, and they are debtors they are. For if the Gentiles have been made partakers of their spiritual things, their duty is also to minister unto them in carnal things. Now, the reason I like that verse is because a lot of times what will be said when we're talking about sending money to people overseas or sending to churches overseas or some of that, and I told you that there was an occurrence on Facebook, which just pretty much says all that needs to be said, but there's an occurrence on Facebook where all this got started up, and oh, well, if you do that, you're going to spoil them, and they need to work for it because they'll appreciate it more, and if you just give things to people, they won't appreciate it, and if you just keep giving money to these churches, they'll just take it in, and they'll never learn how to do for themselves, and all this garbage. And all I say is that Romans chapter 15, you know, way back then, the churches in Macedonia and Achaia had a desire because they saw the poor saints there, and they said, you know what, we're going to give unto these poor saints. And Paul said, you know what, it actually makes sense, because if they have reaped from the spiritual things that came out of Jerusalem, which means the Jerusalem church being the epicenter, first church starting there, if the spiritual outflow, which got to Macedonia and Achaia, started from Jerusalem, he says, if they've been reaping the benefits of getting to be a part of the church that started in Jerusalem, doesn't it make sense that they should reap the carnal things? Mm-hmm. That Achaia and Macedonia, shouldn't they send back to them when they are in need of carnal things? We've been taking spiritual from them. I think we can repay with some carnal and not have any objections about that.
Yeah. Amen.
So if you wanted those verses, there they are. Standardized giving, if you look in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, he makes the statement that upon the first day of the week, Paul called them to make a gathering, a collection of all of the abundance that they had. So some people will say, well, it shouldn't be standardized. You shouldn't have any kind of salary, or you shouldn't have any kind of organized in your giving, because then there's some kind of violation of the left hand not knowing what the right hand is doing, except Paul commanded the church to do that, to have a set time where he made the collection, okay? And then a verse that I want you to go, and I know I'm blitzing over these, and I just want you to jot them down so you can look at them. But in Proverbs chapter 11, there in verse 24 through 25, you'll find there where there's a statement there. There's a proverb given there which says that the liberal soul shall be made fat. Okay, and what I mean by that, and what he means by that in those verses, and you see in both of those verses when you read them together, is he says there's a man who will go out and who will give abundantly and have more to take in than a man who will withhold and never give. So yes, the principle is there. 10% is not the set in stone, if I only have to give 10%, so I'm only going to give 10%. The teaching is there that you should be giving more. You should be giving in abundance, and that the liberal soul, the one that's giving away, that's not liberal like Democrat, because we all know that's not true. But the liberal soul who's free in his giving, he's going to be made fat. It's over and over and over again. God tells us there in Malachi, come back and give the tithes and offerings unto me, and watch me open up the windows and pour out a blessing that you can't even contain. And I say it, and you know, and I kind of ascribe to it, believe it, and have faith in it that, you know, when you get your finances and your house in order to where you're giving what you should be giving, and I use 10% because I say 10% is a very good starting place, okay? It's a number that's been used for the last, you know, the whole Old Testament for 4,000 years. It was a principle. I think it's acceptable. Okay. You know, it's something that was used that whole time. So that's where I start at, is with the 10%, just like they did. And you know what? I've never found want. I've never found where, when I'm looking in at my statement going, well, I'm really going to have to cut back on what I need to give to the church because I can't pay the light bill. Now, you know what I have done? I don't have cable anymore. Now, we can have cable. It's not like I couldn't have it if I wanted, but you know what? In evaluating finances and things like that, you can look at it and go, you know what? Why am I paying $70 a month for something that I watch maybe 7% of the time? So there's things, and that's something, as a side note, I put out on the back table some little evaluation tools that you know, I don't know how many of y'all have ever read Dave Ramsey. It's pretty good stuff. You should probably read it. But you read Dave Ramsey, and there's some things that you don't do just like he says. I mean, you can get real crazy, Dave, and be really, really, you know, down onto the wire. But it is a very excellent starting point to get yourself in order, because you start going through there, listing out all your expenses, going, why am I paying $50 a month for this? Why am I paying $75 a month for this? Why am I paying $120 a month for this? Why do I have a home phone and two cell phones, and I never use this one, but I'm still paying $90 for it a month? Mm-hmm. So there's things like that that you start cutting back, and then you start realizing in all of that, the first fruits of what I give goes to the church. Mm-hmm. So there's nowhere in where we're rearranging our finances where we go, well, I've got to pay all these bills off first, and then whatever's left over, I'm going to make sure I give to the church. No, there's 10% of what you take in every month or more. Whatever you feel in led in being doing, there's 10% of that or more that you look at and you say, 10% of it is cut out of this, is the first fruits of this is what's going to the church, this is what's going to God, because he has blessed me with the increase, and I'm giving him my return on that. And then you start working the rest of your life around it. Then you start working out, well, maybe 3,000 channels on DirecTV. Maybe that's a little bit exuberant, and maybe that's a little bit too much. Maybe I need to cut back a little bit. If I'm having a hard time, if giving to the church is such a burden on me financially, maybe I need to look and see if maybe I don't need the new car, or maybe I don't need the new computer, or maybe I don't need the new iPhone every 2 years, or maybe I don't need the cable. Maybe I don't need some of these things, but I do need to give to the church. We kind of broke it down in last week, you know, and we talked about that, you know, for a full-time support, and we threw out $50,000 a year for a pastor, ends up being that 20 people would have to end up paying $104 every 2 weeks. And then I did a breakdown on, now that we're talking about tithing, okay, when you look at tithing and using 10% as your example, let's just say everybody in here made $30,000 a year. 10% of $30,000 every 2 weeks is $125. So if everybody in here was just making $30,000 and nobody else was making more of that, nobody else was making less than that, and we were giving the 10% that we should be giving, we're giving $25, about $20. I know Brother John's back there going, your math is wrong on that one. $21, how about that? I'll get real specific. You know, I give vague things. You know, in nursing you use vague things. You don't get specifics like decimal points and stuff. About. Exactly, about 5 milliliters, that's all you need. You're giving $21 extra, actually. $21 extra. So everybody would be giving $21 extra. Now multiply that times 20 and you got all that extra money coming in, plus you're supporting a pastor $50,000 a year full time. So the idea that it can't be done is folly. The idea that it can be done and should be done is actually the biblical principle. And in all reality, if we were giving like we should be giving, it would not be even an issue. All right, so now moving on. That was just the introduction. Chapter 9, starting in verse 14. Even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. And that is, again, over and over again, Paul will make this point. The man of God should not be living off the secular world. He should be living off the gospel. He should be living like a Levite. He should be living in the sense that he is supported and upheld by the church for the purpose that his sole duty is studying and expounding on the Word of God. You know who gets benefits from that? Us.
Yes. Yes.
It's like the law of exponential returns, okay? You have the man of God that has 40 to 60 hours a week that he's studying the Bible. Well, you know what that means? You've got 40 to 60 more dedicated hours of learning, study, increase, biblical gain out of that. Now, as Brother Charles was talking about this morning, and as we've talked about many times in the past few weeks, we have to establish, though, that we actually think that's important. We have to actually, you know, believe that following God, studying the Word, and the weight of the truth of God's Word actually has importance in our life, and we need it.
Yep.
So we have to get that first. This will never change if that's not the case. If the only reason we're giving money is because I got up here and I made some kind of statement or I preached on it 2 Sundays in a row, well then we've missed the point. The point of it is not so that we can just be different or be like everybody else or whatever, or we can start holding to some kind of judicial rule of 10% so that I can check that off and say that I've done what I'm supposed to do. That's not the point. The point is we should be looking at this as, this is the means by which I see, number one, my pastor get the full opportunity to be able to study like he's supposed to, and then I get to see the full fruits of that in the message that I hear, in the ministry that I get, in the counseling that I get, in the nursing home visits that I get, in the deathbed visits that I get, in the hospital visits that I get, in the phone calls at 3 a.m. that I can get. That's where that comes from. So he says that the man of God should be living by the gospel. He says, but I have used none of these things, neither have I written these things that it should be so done unto me, for it were better for me to die than any man should make my glorying void. Now, all he's saying there is that that caveat was, I'm not saying this to you because I want you to turn around and write me a check, because basically I'm not going to take money from you here at Corinth. It's not going to happen. He gets into that later. He said, it's not going to happen because there's so much there has been so much naysaying, okay? And that's over in 2 Corinthians. We'll capture it at some point in time. But in 2 Corinthians, if you want to look over there, chapter 11, that's where he talks about that. There were so many people that when he first got there, false prophets and false teachers who came in and started backbiting about how Paul was just going around on a money gathering trip. And so Paul made a statement. Paul made an absolute, I'm not going to do this at Corinth. So he's not going to take money. And that's what he says there is, I'm not doing this so you will give me money. He says, I'm not telling you this because I want you to write me a check. I want you to, though, to support the man that's going to be here and be the pastor at this church. He says, I want you to be in support and fulfilling what God would expect you to do at Corinth. Okay? He said, but I didn't write this so that y'all could write me a check. I didn't write this so that y'all could make my glorying void. And what he's saying by that is I don't want you to take everything that I've just expounded unto you and turn it into this was just all about the money. Okay? So he says, for though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of. For necessity is laid upon me. Yea, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. For if I do this thing willingly, I have a reward. But if against my will, a dispensation of the gospel is committed unto me. So he just says, look, I'm here to preach the gospel. I don't care about the money. I'm not desiring the money. I don't want you to turn around and give me money. And if I never got paid by anyone or ever supported, and I lived in rags and ate the dust of the ground and the leaves off the trees, I would still be sustained and I would have my reward because I'm preaching what God has called me to preach. He said, but even if I don't, even if against my will, he said, there's still no option. I've been given this dispensation or I have been made a steward of this, of the gospel that is committed unto me. He said, this has been given to me. I don't have an option in this. I don't have this, well, if it works out with my schedule or if the money's right or if time is right or whatever, I'll preach the gospel. No, he says, God's put it on me and I've got to do it and I'm going to do it and I'm willing to do it whether you pay me or not. And he said, what is my reward then? He said, verily, that when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge, that I abuse not my power in the gospel. So here at Corinth, he says, you ask me then, what is this reward? What is the fruit of my labor here? It's that I can preach the gospel unto you, and I don't have to listen to all these other people yanning about, well, Paul's just doing it for money. I'm proving to you, no, I'm not, and I'm still preaching the gospel. I'm still here. Paul, when you go over into Acts and you read his accounts here, in Acts, he spent a year and a half at Corinth establishing that church. So Paul did all of this. He worked this labor without pay to prove something to the church at Corinth, but also to all those people who were backbiting and backstabbing him about it. And you can flip over to 2 Corinthians chapter 11, because I think it would be good if we grab that. So he says in verse 7, chapter 11 of 2 Corinthians, verse 11, he says, have I committed an offense in abasing myself that ye might be exalted because I have preached to you the gospel of God freely? I robbed other churches, taking wages of them to do you service. And when I was present with you and wanted, I was chargeable to no man. For that which was lacking to me, the brethren which came from Macedonia supplied. And in all things I have kept myself from being burdensome unto you, and so will I keep myself. As the truth of Christ is in me, no man shall stop me of this boasting in the regions of Achaia. Wherefore, because I love you not, God knoweth. But what I do, that I will do, that I may cut off occasion from them which desire occasion, that wherein they glory, they may be found even as we. For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ. So what he says, that is the explanation of why he did it all. He goes there to tell them, the only reason I'm doing this is because there's these men around you who are constantly going around and looking for an occasion to attack me. And we talked about that in the first few verses of chapter 9. They were attacking him about marriage. They were attacking him about not giving. They were attacking him about what he ate. They were attacking about eating things offered unto idols. You know, they found all these occasions to try to hit at him with. And he said, this one thing I'm going to take completely away from them. I'm not going to take any money from you. I'm going to work as a tent maker. I'm not going to give them an occasion at this church to corrupt the message of the gospel. So that's all he was saying in this. All he said was is that it is desired, it is good, it's what you should do. You should support the minister, you should support the man. You're not going to do it to me because I already have people picking at me, asking me, or trying to call me out like I'm only doing this for money. So you're not going to give it to me, but this is the reason. So he says he abased himself in that sense. Gave up, you know, you could think of it like this. He gave up what was properly due towards him so that he had the opportunity to make a statement there. That the gospel couldn't be interfered with. Okay? And that's what he gets into in these next few verses. Starting in verse 19, he says, For though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant unto all, that I might gain the more. And unto the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews, to them that are under the law, as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law, to them that are without the law, as without the law, being not without the law to God, but under the law to Christ, that I might gain them which are without law. To the weak became I as weak, that I might gain the weak. And I am made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. So Paul says, why am I doing this? Why did I base myself? Why do I go through this trouble? Why do I work when I don't think I should work? Why am I doing all this? And he said, my whole goal is because by this I'm hoping that I can gain, or I can save in that sense. I can deliver, I can preach the gospel, and hopefully see some people converted here at Corinth. He says, I do this in many different ways. He said, when I'm with the Jews, I become as a Jew. Now, this is a little bit different. This isn't the same thing as like what Peter did, okay? You know, we go over into Galatians and we look over there where Paul comes up to Peter and, you know, lambasts Peter about Peter running away from the Jew or running away from the Gentiles when he's sitting down to eat with the Jews, you know, and they're going back and forth on that. This is a little bit different than that. Paul is not saying that I am over here acting like the law is everything with the Jews, and then when the Gentiles come around, well, now I'm over here talking about why the law doesn't matter. And not that, but what he's saying is, and you see it in his writings, okay? You want to flip over to Hebrews when he's writing to Hebrews, and he uses a lot of stuff that Hebrews would know about, right? So you go over to Hebrews and you start reading about Melchizedek, and he's going over listing thousands of times about Abraham and Isaac and their faith and Moses and the law and the sacrifices and how none of them applied the blood. You know, the blood didn't take anyone's sins away. And he goes about the high priest and the great high priest we have. And he goes through all these things with the Hebrews that they would relate to. When he's in Romans, or when he's in Galatians, and when he's in Ephesians, and when he's in Philippians, he doesn't expound all these, all these great exegetical, you know, things on the law. He doesn't go back and say, well, you remember about how when you sacrifice the goat and the calves and the Passover lamb and all this stuff, because the Gentiles are going to go, no, not really, because we didn't do that, because we were heathens. So he didn't expound on the law on those things. And then instead in those, like in Galatians, all he starts going through is going, it's about freedom. It's about freedom in Christ. In Ephesians, he'll talk about Christ breaking down that middle wall of partition and bringing two people together. He'll go through these books where it's directed towards more Gentile audiences, and he changes some of the way that he expresses the gospel. Now, in any of those ways, does he change the gospel? No. And this is also not, this is not a, I guess I use the phrase portal of entry, which just because that's a nursing thing. It's like portals of infection, you know, ways that you get. All right. So this is not some kind of access route to where you say, oh, well, that is a completely cultural relevancy of the gospel, and therefore you should make the gospel as culturally relevant as possible. So today we have everybody's very big into the pop scene and in rock stars and stuff like that. So we need to get up here and put Jesus on display in some kind of rock star showing. Or, you know, we need to have some kind of, you know, huge 3D, digital projection of Christ and make that how the gospel is delivered, because we're trying to be all things to all men by the means of saving some. Well, that's not what he was saying, okay? That's not what he was putting on with all this. He wasn't saying that you change the gospel, change Christ to be more culturally relevant at that time, to fit in a little bit better. That's not what he's saying. But he is saying that when I'm amongst certain people, I'm going to, and this is the best way I can describe it, I'm going to talk to them at their level, okay? Yep. Now, the Jews he was talking to were obviously not ignorant people. He still talked to them at their level. That didn't mean he dumbed himself down to them. It just means he started talking at their level. Their level is the law. Well, I'm going to show the law. I'm going to show you how by the law you can see Christ fulfilled in him being your Messiah. All right, now when we're talking to the Gentiles. When I'm talking to the Gentiles, they don't have a clue about the law. So instead, I'm going to talk more about how they have this Savior, this light, as was prophesied in the Old Testament. They have this Savior that has loved them before the foundation of the world and chose to bless them in ways that they never even expected it to come. And over in Acts, and you go over to Acts chapter... Well, if I can think of it. Acts where he, it just went out of my head, but where he goes to Mars Hill, chapter 17. When he goes to Mars Hill and he's speaking unto the Athenians, there's the verse there, okay? If you go over and I totally wrote this down. I don't know where I, what I did with it. Oh, there it is. In Acts chapter 17, when Paul quotes the Greek prophet, I mean the Greek poet, you know, he'll say over there that even your poets also say that we are his children, talking about God, all right? And they were talking about Jupiter. If you ever want to read that, it's a Greek poet by the name of Aratus, and it's from the book called Phenomena. If you ever wanted to read that and just for to kill some time. But what Paul was doing there is in his addressing to these pagan people on Mars Hill, he brings in one of their own poets, which means he had to have read that, right? So he was studying and knew their culture to a degree that he could bring this up and say, even your poet says that we are the children of God. Therefore, how can we create something that is our God? So he used the culture and he used the people he was addressing, and he brought out things that were relevant to them to make them see the light of the gospel in that. So that's what he's talking about in these verses. He's saying that I become all things to all men. I get down on their level, which is something that we need to always consider. Especially when we're talking about individual evangelism or where we're talking about it as a church whole. We got to make sure, you know, there's this... which, you know, not necessarily like I agree 100% with it, but, you know, there's a phrase if you're in any kind of, you know, just circle of Christianity today, there's this seeker-friendly thing. Seeker-friendly. We're making this more seeker-friendly, and seekers being people who are seeking the gospel, and we're going to make it more seeker-friendly, okay? So we're going to make the church more seeker-friendly, the message more seeker-friendly, we're going to make the display of it more seeker-friendly, and that kind of spirals off sometimes into getting into things like Rock Band Productions of Christ and all this stuff, but that is kind of, in a way, what Paul is talking about in this. I'm going to bring this to light in a way that you are going to understand it better, okay? And that goes a lot with us, all right? And I'll give you an example. Sometimes we want to walk up to somebody, and when they first start asking about our church, the first thing we want to do is start laying very long, like 10 to 12 letter words, and being that as the primary thing that we're going at them with to tell them about Christ. Well, you know, at our church, we believe in predestination and election, and our soteriology is yada, 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 and our eschatology is da-da-da-da. And, you know, you start throwing out these big words to people who are like, well, we just wanted to know who Christ was. Well, why did I talk about predestination and election in that? Why did I talk about foreknowledge, and why did I talk about original sin, or why did I talk about total depravity, or why did I talk about, you know, unconditional election or limited atonement, or why did I use that kind of way when instead I could have simply said the same message by saying something like, well, Christ is this man who was God, who came down to the earth, and the beautiful thing in it is that he knew us before the foundation of the world, before this world was ever created. He loved us, and he said, you know what? I'm going to die for you so that you can be with me in glory. I said, that's foreknowledge, election, predestination, all of that wrapped up in there, but I didn't use my big words that I got paid a lot of money for. I didn't use those kind of words. Now, if you're dealing with someone who is a religion or philosophy major at Samford University or something like that, okay, and, you know, and they're throwing out all those words like eschatology and soteriology and whatever, well, then by all means, engage. Engage on that level. Throw it out there. Use big words. Use bigger words than them, okay? Show them how smart you are with your big words, all right? But that's what I'm talking about with, and that's what Paul was talking about with this. You meet them on their level. With someone who's been born and bred in the church, you don't have to go up to them and be like, do you know who Jesus Christ is? Well, yes, I've grown up in the church. Maybe you need to explain to them how what Christ really did on the cross, or what Christ accomplished in his coming here. What all this, what that word predestination means in Ephesians chapter 1 that you've just skipped over all your life. You know, what all this stuff actually means. If someone's in the church, that's one way to address them. Someone outside of the church, there's another way to address them. Someone who's been stuck in heroin addiction for 10 years, you're going to address them a little bit differently. So that's all he's saying. And it's something that we need to really keep in mind when we're talking to people and when we're trying to bring the message of the gospel. Paul's whole point in doing it the way he did was because he didn't want to alienate the message. He didn't want people walking away from the gospel of Jesus Christ because they had other people talking to him, or he misrepresented himself in a way that would let some other static in the air distract away from that. Mm-hmm. To let the static of, well, you're just doing this for money. No, 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 get back to the message. Well, you're just doing this because you want me to pay you. No, 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 get back to the message. You don't want to get distracted in the message. The thing that, as we're talking about the power of God unto salvation, the thing that child of God needs to hear is the gospel. And if it's distracted because we've flittered it up with a lot of nice big words, or we've let our walk in a way distract that, we let our language in a way distract that, we let our tradition in a way distract that, and we're getting away from it. So in that, Paul's saying, you got to make sure that when we're talking about the message of God, of the gospel of Jesus Christ, you got to make sure that I'm all things to all men. Maybe that means I abase myself. Maybe that means I come down off my intellectual high horse and just talk to people in plain Jane English. Okay? Instead of trying to, in an innate kind of way, prove my superiority and my, you know, and my smarts with it, maybe we just, instead of, you know, trying to grab every verse that's ever coincided with God's choice from Genesis to Revelations, maybe we just stick on John chapter 3, verse 16 and go, I can show you how God fulfilled this and what it actually means. So we got to make sure that we're fulfilling that, that we're not letting the message of Christ get distracted by the static of whatever it may be. And so he goes on and he says in verse 24, know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. Now, one of the chapters and the verses I didn't get to is Philippians chapter 4. If you go over there, everybody knows that chapter, because what does that one say? And whatsoever state I'm in, therewith I am to be content. Okay, and so Paul says that when I'm abased, when I'm beaten, when I'm whatever, I'm content in what I'm doing. I also want you to read that whole chapter, because in that, Paul makes another reference to the people at Macedonia who were giving him money while he was traveling. So just so you're aware of that, that's another one of those examples where the church at Macedonia was supporting him in his travels. But with that chapter as well, Paul uses that with this chapter 9 of 1 Corinthians. He ties it into being, if I'm abased, if I'm poor, if I'm rich, if I'm beaten, if I'm well provided for, in whichever place I'm in, I'm content in what I'm doing, which is preaching the gospel. So he uses that as a way of saying, I'm not doing this for money. I'm not doing this to try to get you to give me money. Paul is directing the church, saying, you need to be doing these things. You need to be giving. You need to be supporting the minister, because in the end, that's going to be what's going to be most beneficial for that body and that congregation. But in his writings here, he says, I am all things to all men. I am putting myself where I need to be, even if that means I'm sacrificing cable or whatever. I'm sacrificing, I'm doing what I need to do, so that my ultimate goal is that the people that I'm preaching to hear the message without any static. Does that make sense? Yeah. So I hope these things have been beneficial. Hopefully we'll get into chapter 10 next week.